This is the Electronic Intifada Newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman, Associate Editor at the Electronic Intifada. It's day 439 of Israel's genocide in Gaza. Here's a brief summary of some of the latest developments this week in Gaza and the West Bank. Israel's campaign of systematic slaughter, forced displacement, destruction, starvation, airstrikes, and massacres continue across all areas of the coastal enclave. In North Gaza, Israel's attacks on Beit Lahia on Tuesday killed at least 8 Palestinians who were sheltering in a home near the Kamal Adwan Hospital. The near-daily attacks on the hospital itself have escalated this past week, with the hospital's director, Dr. Hussam Abu Safia, reporting that debris and explosions are shattering doors and windows, and Israeli attacks have damaged water tanks, the electricity generators, and the oxygen supply network. The United Nations reported that due to ongoing insecurity and the lack of ambulances and equipment, medical staff at Kamal Adwan Hospital have generally been unable to assist people trapped under the rubble in the surrounding areas or have themselves been hit. On December 12th, the Palestinian Health Ministry in Gaza announced that Dr. Saeed Joda, the last orthopedic doctor in North Gaza, was killed while en route from Kamal Adwan to the nearby Al-Auda Hospital to treat patients. A nurse, Kerem Jadadat, was also killed the same day while traveling to Kamal Adwan. The health ministry said that Dr. Joda was injured 2 weeks ago, but he continued to treat patients. His nephew was killed last month. In a report issued this week, Euromed Human Rights Monitor stated that Dr. Joda was shot in the head by an Israeli quadcopter drone. His killing, they say, demonstrated that it was a premeditated and deliberate murder, especially, quote, given that he was the only orthopedic physician in the northern Gaza Strip. Euromed added, quote, the few medical teams that have remained in northern Gaza are being targeted by the Israeli occupation army in a methodical, obvious, and recurring pattern. This makes it extremely difficult to provide medical care to the tens of thousands of residents who have been under siege for the last 11 weeks. The human rights group added that the number of Palestinian medical personnel who have been killed since October 7, 2023 is 1,057, and more than 135 scientists and academics have also been killed. Over the weekend, the World Health Organization and its partners reached Kamal Adwan Hospital to deliver essential supplies. The head of the WHO said that fuel, food, and medicine were delivered, and they were able to transfer a few patients and their companions to Al-Shifa Hospital in Gaza City. Kamal Adwan Hospital is still without specialized physicians for surgical and maternal care. The conditions, the WHO's head stated, are, quote, simply appalling. The hospital's director, Dr. Abu Safia, said that on Monday, Israeli snipers had targeted the intensive care unit and destroyed all the windows, forcing medical staff to treat patients in the hallways. And this morning, a fire broke out in the intensive care unit due to heavy Israeli fire on the hospital. A small group of civil defense workers announced that they were resuming operations in Jabalia after more than 60 days of being prevented from working by the Israeli army. The civil defense team said that, quote, following the arrest of 10 team members, the Palestinian civil defense has resumed operations in Jabalia with renewed determination. The team is fully prepared and ready to continue their mission of saving lives and serving the community. Salute to everybody, they said. On Sunday, December 15th, the Israeli military carried out a massacre on displaced Palestinian families sheltering at the Khalil Oweda School in Beit Hanun, in the northernmost area of the Gaza Strip. The Gaza government media office said that at least 43 people were killed. According to the United Nations, at least 10 people were burned alive. Israeli soldiers detained male Palestinians and forced women and children to move southwards. Eyewitnesses told the Palestinian civil defense that they saw decomposing bodies in the alleys and streets, and that several inhabited houses near the school were subjected to heavy shelling. People reported hearing cries of others who were trapped under the rubble. the school had housed about 1,500 displaced persons. Israel attacked another school shelter on Saturday, December 14th, in western Gaza City. Hossam Shabbat, one of the few surviving journalists working in North Gaza, reported from the scene. On the same day, Israeli forces bombed a home in Shujaiya, northern Gaza City, killing at least six people. Israeli-armed quadcopter drones opened fire at a group of people in the Shati, or beach refugee camp, northwest of Gaza City on Monday, tearing their bodies apart, according to reporters. Al Jazeera's Hani Mahmoud said that, quote, the Israeli military uses drones packed with little pieces of metals that fly at such a high speed that when they explode, they cut through the flesh and cause severe bleeding. In central Gaza, the Israeli army committed a series of massacres in so-called humanitarian safe zones. On Monday, Israeli forces besieged Al-Mawasi, an area on the southern coastal sand dunes where Palestinians have been forcibly displaced. Doctors Without Borders reported that 12 of their team members and their families were surrounded by bombing and heavy shootings in their homes, while more than 30 others were trapped in the group's office. A staff member stated, quote, tanks were invading the area where we live. It was terrifying. We were lying on the ground in our homes for hours, and it seemed like the gunfire was coming directly towards us. Israeli forces bombed the municipal building of the city of Deir al-Balah, killing the city's mayor, Dr. Diab Ali al-Jaru, along with a group of city employees and residents on Saturday, December 14th. Our contributor Abu Bakr Abed reported from the scene of the attack in its aftermath.
Targeted area is in the open market where hundreds of people, but maybe thousands of people do usually gather. So that's why the attack has been devastating and claimed the lives of so many people and wounded several others, many others even. And I can see just around me, as you can see, probably 3 to 4 ambulances have just arrived and many have reached the hospital just in the during the past few minutes, and it just keeps going on like this. This is a safe humanitarian zone according to the Israeli military, but you can see just intensified attacks on Deir al-Balah, and just the initial report we have so far is 7 people killed, many injuries, but yes, just the pickup trucks, the other civilian cars, and the ambulances are still going to the hospital, rushing to the hospital, holding and transferring many casualties.
That was Abu Bakr Abed reporting from Deir al-Balah. On Sunday, December 15th, Israel bombed field headquarters for the civil defense in nearby Nuseirat, killing 4 high-level staff and volunteer rescue workers. It was one of several consecutive massacres in and around Nuseirat that day. The Gaza government media office said that a residential area in Nuseirat refugee camp killed more than 30 Palestinians. Another bombing was reported in Burej refugee camp. Also on Sunday, Israel bombed the Ahmed bin Abdulaziz School, a UN school which has sheltered displaced people near the Nasser Medical Complex in Khan Yunis. The UN stated that within minutes, Nasser's emergency department was flooded with casualties, most of them women and children. Many were severely injured and died on site or en route to the hospital. In testimonies collected by Medical Aid for Palestinians, which operates at Nasser Medical Complex, a physician stated, quote, we received a huge number of casualties. The emergency department was full of women, children, and elderly patients with severe injuries. I lost count of the number of patients that came in with injuries I've never seen in my entire career. I counted at least 18 victims who died in the emergency department. Of these, there were 12 children under the age of 12 years old. The very first patient that came in, the physician said, was a 3-year-old girl who had the left side of her forehead torn open by shrapnel fragments that had penetrated her skull. Due to the limited amount of painkillers and anesthetics that we had available, we had to undertake the procedure in the emergency room with very little access to medications. Early this morning, Wednesday, the Samir Project, a local aid group, reported that an airstrike had hit a tent encampment adjacent to their Rifat al-Arir camp in Deir Bala. At least two people were killed, according to reports. The Samir Project stated, quote, "Nowhere in Gaza is safe. This sobering reminder was felt by the families in our camp. The missile could be heard swirling down before impact. Imagine not knowing where it will land, what it will destroy, how many will be massacred." Little Mimi, a pediatric cardiac patient who needs open-heart surgery, was terrified. "This is the horrific reality that children and adults contend with daily, indiscriminate bombing and carnage caused by the occupation." Thank you to the staff and all the members of the camp who are now family with one another, who provided comfort. But it leaves the question, what's next? Where is the next target? Who are the next to suffer? Ceasefire now. A recent study based on data collected in June by several international human rights groups, including War Child Alliance, was published this week, revealing that of the children in the surveyed households where at least one child is injured, disabled, unaccompanied, or separated from parents, 96% of those children felt that their death was imminent. 49% of the surveyed children expressed a desire to die. The study also found that 92% of children were not accepting reality, 83% experienced severe fear, and 73% exhibited aggressive behavior, with many more showing signs of withdrawal and anxiety alongside a pervasive sense of hopelessness. Israel killed four journalists in Gaza this week. The Gaza government media office says that the number of reporters and media workers who have been killed since October 2023 now stands at 196. Ahmed Bakr Al-Luh, a cameraman for Al Jazeera, was killed in a bombing in Nuseirat on Sunday. According to the network, he was killed while covering rescue operations by the civil defense crews in the aftermath of an earlier bombing and was wearing his press vest and helmet. His home, where he lived with his wife and family, was, quote, utterly destroyed by Israel in a bombing in Nuseirat camp just days before. Mohammed Jaber al-Karnawi, a correspondent for Sanad News Agency, was killed along with his wife and three children in an Israeli bombing of Burej refugee camp also on Sunday. And Mohammed Baloucha, who worked for the Al-Mashhad satellite channel, was killed on Saturday in a drone attack in Gaza City. Baloucha was the reporter who first discovered the tiny, decomposed corpses of premature babies at Al-Nasser Pediatric Hospital in late November 2023. The babies had been left to die, cold, hungry, alone, and in pain over a period of 17 days, after Israeli forces ordered hospital staff to leave the facility. As we reported at the time, the parents of the fragile newborns were apparently told by the Israeli military that the Red Cross would evacuate their babies safely, according to testimonies. But that did not happen. Baloucha was shot in the thigh by an Israeli sniper a month later, while he was reporting in Jabalia refugee camp. According to the Committee to Protect Journalists, he lost consciousness for about 30 minutes before being revived by the nuzzling of cats he had been feeding before he was shot. Al-Mashhad TV said that Israeli forces blocked ambulances from reaching him, delaying his transfer to hospital for treatment. Al Jazeera stated that after surviving the sniper attack, Baloucha continued reporting on the war for months, despite his injuries, before he was killed in an Israeli drone attack in Gaza City on Saturday. On December 11th, journalist Iman Hatem Al-Shanti, who was a broadcaster for Sawat Al-Aqsa Radio, was killed in an Israeli bombing of a residential apartment in the Sheikh Radwan neighborhood of Gaza City, along with her son and other relatives. We've published many features on the Electronic Intifada in the last week, but we wanted to highlight excerpts of this one by Asim Al-Nabih, an engineer and PhD researcher currently based in North Gaza. He serves as the spokesperson for Gaza Municipality. In this achingly beautiful feature, Asim writes about Gaza's suffering, inviting us to ask, how do Palestinians respond to devastation with resilience rather than despair? quote, attitudes toward death and sacrifice play an essential role in Gaza's resilience. Here, death really is a constant companion. Yet it is not viewed as an ending, but as a continuation of a larger struggle. Suffering, in this worldview, becomes a portal to another realm, where the values and principles people live for persist. The sacrifices we make are not in vain. They are for something far greater, a future in which justice, dignity, and humanity triumph. Resistance in Gaza is not merely a physical struggle. It is also a spiritual and philosophical act. It transcends the immediate physical pain and confronts the existential questions of what it means to live and die under oppression. Our rejection of submission to tyranny represents a collective affirmation of life, of dignity, and of refusing to let our humanity be extinguished. Even in the darkest moments, when death looms large and life seems precarious, Palestinians in Gaza continue to fight. We rebuild what is destroyed, bury our dead, and wake each day to an uncertain future. In doing so, we assert something profound, that our existence is more than just a series of tragedies. Our defiance, our survival, our resistance all speak to a deeper truth, that life, in all its pain and beauty, is worth defending. This is the purpose of Gaza's suffering. Like Prometheus's stolen fire, it is a gift not only for us, but for the world. Our endurance lights the path for those who face similar struggles, reminding us that, even in the face of overwhelming odds, there is always hope. The resistance of Gaza is the embodiment of a powerful rejection. It is a refusal to accept injustice and subjugation, and a call for the world to recognize that freedom and dignity are worth every sacrifice. In the end, Gaza's suffering is not without purpose. It is the flame that continues to burn, lighting the way forward, even when all else seems lost. Those are excerpts from When Suffering Becomes an Affirmation of Life by Asim Al-Nabih on electronicintifada.net. And turning to the occupied West Bank, my colleague Tamara Nassar published two reports for us this week on how the Palestinian Authority is, as she writes, quote, demonstrating its value and proving loyalty to its Israeli and American masters through a deadly military operation in the northern occupied West Bank city of Jenin. Tamara wrote over the weekend that, quote, the Palestinian Authority recently launched a deadly military operation in the occupied West Bank city of Jenin and its refugee camp, assassinating a member of an armed group on Saturday and killing both a Palestinian teen and a child. Anwar Rajab, the spokesperson of the PA security forces, claimed the military operation, dubbed Operation Protect the Homeland, was intended to put an end to sedition and chaos. The New York Times reported, a euphemism for the PA doing Israel's bidding by targeting armed Palestinian groups resisting Israel's land grabs and military occupation. Rajab called this a new stage where PA forces aim to regain control of the Jenin camp from lawbreakers who ruin the lives of the citizenry amid a campaign of killings and arrests. PA forces invaded Jenin with armored vehicles on Saturday, killing Yazid Jaisa, a member of the Jenin Brigade, a group associated with Saraya al-Quds, the military wing of Islamic Jihad. More than 20 Palestinians have been injured in the Israeli-style military raid since December 14th. Tamara adds that, quote, intensified PA aggression in Jenin sparked widespread unrest, with calls for the dismantling of the collaboration body. A member of the PA forces resigned from his position and publicly disavowed the body following the killing of al-Shalabi, taking off his uniform. On Tuesday, Tamara updated the developing story. Quote, since the military operation began, PA forces have occupied the Jenin government hospital, cut off electricity and water to the camp, shot and killed two youths in addition to a member of the armed resistance, creating a state of fear and uncertainty in the camp. Schools have been closed in the area, with students shifting to virtual learning. Jenin residents have observed a camp-wide strike for the fourth day in a row to protest the PA's incursion. UNRWA, the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, has been forced to suspend its operations in the area. The Palestinian Authority operation is being carried out with full coordination with Israel, Hebrew media has reported. PA security chiefs even met with Michael Fenzel, a U.S. lieutenant general who oversees so-called security ties between Israel and the Palestinians, ahead of the operation to go over planning details. The PA officials handed Fenzel a detailed list of weaponry needed to intensify their offensive against Palestinians, Axios reported. The U.S. is now asking Israel to authorize the transfer of weapons to the PA, ensuring it can continue carrying out Israel's dirty work. For much more on this story, read Tamara Nassar's recent reports, Palestinian Authority Does Israel's Bidding in Jenin, and Palestinian Authority Proves Loyalty to U.S. Israel by Attacking Jenin on electronicintifada.net. And finally, as we always do, we wanted to share images of people expressing defiance and resilience in the face of Israel's campaign of destruction. This video, reposted by Translating Palestine and Eye on Palestine, shows a man in North Gaza emerging from beneath the rubble of a recent bombing, emerging alive and relatively unharmed. He says that this is the second time that this has happened to him. He had been healing from a previous injury that has left him with a colectomy, but he thanked God for his survival. Praise God, we're steadfast here, he says. Maha Husseini, a researcher with Euromed Human Rights Monitor who has been on this live stream before, posted this photo of sprouting seedlings that her mother planted. Maha writes, quote, "Known for her love of food, my mom used to delight in inviting people over, showing off her cooking skills, and serving a variety of delicious dishes. But for 14 months now, she hasn't been able to eat most of the food she loved, including green beans. Since the first day of its genocide, the Israeli occupation has made it clear that it aims to create inhumane conditions in Gaza by cutting off food, water, and medicine to the already 17-year blockaded strip. A few weeks ago, a friend of my mother's gave her a few beans to plant, something my mom used to do often when we were home in Gaza City. She loved planting vegetables on our balcony, including small cherries, mint, and basil. I can't describe the joy on her face as she asked me to fill the plastic pot with sand from outside our shelter, even before her friend had left. I brought the pot filled with sand, and she carefully wet the sand, gently pushing each bean into it while talking about how she would cook the first green beans to bloom. This morning, as I was leaving the shelter for work, I noticed the pot outside the door. It had turned a vibrant green, with the stems swaying in the wind, reaching out in every direction." These two toddlers rejoiced at the sight of a few eggs, which have become a precious and scarce commodity in North Gaza. And that's it for the news roundup. As always, go to electronicintifada.net for much more, especially to read our new features by our brave writers in Gaza. You've been listening to the Electronic Intifada's newscast. I'm Nora Barrows-Friedman. Want to hear more? Check out our live stream with interviews, reports, and analysis, along with print articles, podcasts, and more at electronicintifada.net. Produced by Nora Barrows-Friedman, Tamara Nassar, and Pierre Loisel.